people will get frustrated if the software is not doing very well. It's giving them a bad experience. And observability is the best way to reduce that, to understand from the point of view of the end user how well your software is performing. I like to think that a more mature industry in terms of software development would result in higher level telemetry that is being sent with a much higher ratio of insight versus noise.
Hello, I'm Martin Thwaites.
And I'm Jessica Kerr.
And you're listening to ObservabilityCast, or OlliCast for short, a monthly series where we talk about how we can make production systems more observable, more reliable, and easy to maintain. OlliCast is brought to you by Heavybit, the leading investor in developer-first startups. For more information, visit heavybit.com.
If you're interested in being a guest on this show, or if you have a specific topic you'd like us to dive into, you can reach us on Twitter at OlliCast. That's at O11YCAST.
I was quoting a colleague of mine at the time that I had to explain them, like, yeah, I'm here for observability. Observer what? I think it represents faithfully the reaction of a significant demographic out there.
And do you think that could be to do with bubble? I think a lot of this does come down to bubble at the time. So when you say observer what, do you think that might have been the people who follow Canonical?
What's Canonical?
The people behind Ubuntu.
Thanks.
It's a mix. I mean, definitely there is a strong component of culture and geography in the literacy about observability and monitoring. In 2021, when I wrote that article, there were stark differences between the US and Europe in terms of search patterns, in terms of observability versus monitoring. There is also a age component to this. People that started our profession more than one decade ago, they were exposed to monitoring, right? And despite observability being a different thing, it's such a nuanced proposition for people that are not deep into the matter that it may be hard for people to switch over. For people that start fresh, that is, observability is the word we use nowadays, which is both good and bad. On the one hand, it's a very cool term, and it does provide some very interesting insights. For example, I love the fact that observability is a property, not an activity, like monitoring. That's great. It has been co-opted by previous generations of vendors in the industry and has lost a lot of its novelty and meaning along the way, which is unavoidable. And in a way, marketing works.
Yeah, I think it is one of those things that I like the idea that it's an activity. I think that's a...
Wait. We just said it was a property, not an activity.
That monitoring is an activity, whereas observability is a property. I like that idea that there's a distinction between the two, that they're not the same thing. We're not doing both of them. I think that's quite interesting as a differentiation between the two, because we need that. We need to know what the difference is, because otherwise we're just doing the same thing. We've just given it a new name, which feels pointless.
So there is a very strong correlation. In most cases, you achieve observability by performing monitoring. But observability is not the only reason to monitor your systems. For example, governance or use cases that are beyond DevOps, or even ensuring a good quality of service. They can be perfectly well achieved with monitoring. And on the other hand, monitoring is not the only way to achieve observability. Although in software systems, it tends to, right? I like to think that if as an industry we eventually reached the nirvana of treating observability as a first-class functional requirement for our applications, then the nature of monitoring would change dramatically.
Really?
Whether we're going to get there, it's open to debate.
How would the nature of monitoring change?
The activity around monitoring is in no small part the collection of telemetry and signals, how you put the data together. It's a mix. What you do today is a mix between observing the system as a black box. For example, you go there and scrape metrics. Or the application inside is emitting telemetry towards you. It's sending you logs. It's making metrics available. It's pushing spans. It's collecting profiling data and making it available somewhere nearby where you can read them. I like to think that a more mature industry in terms of software development would result in higher level telemetry that is being sent with a much higher ratio of insight versus noise.
Okay, describe higher level telemetry.
So today, when you send spans, when you meet metrics, when you meet logs, it's effectively assembly level observability. You are putting data out there. The data themselves, they don't mean anything. It's just bits, right? So with logs, you describe events that happen, most of the times in natural language. It takes a human on the other side to read the log and understand what it meant. There are some codified aspects to the data we send out there. Logs have severities. Metrics have shapes and different instruments with expectations about how the data they convey behaves. For example, a gauge can go up and down, a counter does not. There is, and I welcome that because it's a great improvement for a state of the art, an increasing corpus, an increasing amount of semantic conventions that help us not only making telemetry data easier to consume for humans, but also for machines.
Yeah.
Now, this being said, great improvements over the past two decades, we still provide very fine-grained information. It's almost data. The application doesn't have an opinion whether the amount of 500 requests a serving is good or bad. It does not tell you, look, I'm not doing fine because I'm answering so much 500 requests. It just says, these are how many 500 requests I have, with no judgment attached. If we treated observability as a first-class requirement, we would get closer and closer to what good appliances have been all along, where the power on button turns red with potentially a small selection of relatively well-understood error codes that immediately lead you to a runbook of what to do to fix it. We're not there yet. So we are making strides in generating telemetry from our applications and infrastructure, delegating still most of the interpretation, aggregation, evaluation, reaction to this telemetry to backend systems, and then afterwards humans. There is nothing necessarily wrong with this model. There is a nasty coupling in there. But it is, to some extent, wasteful. There are people in the industry that are vocal about how much network traffic can be devoted in observability. The reason why, for example, distributed tracing was born with sampling built in is because of the scale of Google with Dapper. You would not trace every single request. Even tracing one out of 10,000 or 100,000 was enough to give you a statistically accurate view of the system and the behavior. But not every company is Google. So there are different trade-offs in terms of how much telemetry you want to collect, how much you want to pay for it, for example, in terms of egress traffic or storage, and how much utility you get out of it.
So by higher level telemetry, are you looking for something lower volume but higher usefulness?
No, the nature would be different. So there are some interesting experiments up there, which I don't think they're ready for mass consumption or they might never become. They try to describe the application talking about itself in terms of higher level concepts like, I need to throttle. Our applications don't know they need to throttle. Throttling is something that they don't really logic for it more than a counter that says, enough requests, cut it off. Think it a bit like trying to distribute the interpretation of monitoring across your system rather than centralizing it into the one component that consumes the telemetry and then decides whether it's good or bad. It's a bit hard to visualize because we are very far from it in terms of the industry, and it may never happen. But I would like to see applications that come with effectively a much higher grade of built-in understanding of how they're doing.
So I think what we're kind of saying here is applications that can use their own telemetry to make decisions in real time, as opposed to humans making judgment calls afterwards. And I've seen some of these things where one example was a GraphQL server that would use telemetry data to auto-optimize the paths that it took for resolvers, for instance. And I think there's some interesting concepts there about how developers can use that telemetry inside of their applications at runtime in order to understand that. And using that same telemetry data would then allow people to kind of do two things at once. Also get the human analysis piece, so get the telemetry out for human analysis, the thing that humans can do where we can notice patterns. We can notice anomaly patterns, the unknown patterns, whereas an application can do the known patterns. If this happens, then do this, which I think is a really interesting concept. And it's one of the things, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on is because it's how we bring telemetry to developers and make it more meaningful for developers, which I think is a really nice segue for you to introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do.
Before I introduce myself, it's worth noting that in parts of computer science and industry that are more consolidated, more well understood, and to some extent have higher average quality of how things are done, telemetry is used already today to modify dramatically the output. For example, you can feed to the Go compiler profiling data, and it will optimize the code it generates to be more efficient for the kind of logic paths that is available in the profiling data. So it is, I think it's a function very much of the maturity of the technology more than it is of a sort of philosophical point of view of how things should be done.
Cool. So talk to us a bit about you then. Who are you? What are you doing? Why is it you're doing these sort of things? I'm assuming that introducing yourself and your company should give us a little bit of context.
So my name is Michele Manciopi. I have been a product manager in observability for the best part of a decade by now. Before that, I was a staff engineer. And I love observability because it helps me help people do software that works better. I am personally offended by software that sucks. And I think observability is the providing good observability tools is the best way that I can help alleviate that. So now I'm with Dash Zero. We are a bunch of people in love with observability. Most of us were at Instana before. In between Instana and Dash Zero, I've had a few detours by Canonical, where I was doing observability mostly based on Juju, so their orchestration, and then Domigo, serverless observability. Before joining Instana, I was a staff engineer at SAP, and I fell in love with observability when one day my product owner came to me with his laptop, showed me a LinkedIn page of somebody in Brazil that said that they thought they logged into someone else's account on SAP Cloud Platform, which was not great to hear. And I spent the best part of a week crawling through access logs to figure out what they did. And access logs were not enough. So I had to walk across the floor and talk with the one person in the authorization database, where he found out immediately that in reality, this person had two accounts, and one was a trial, and he forgot, of course, about it or was confused. So he misinterpreted that. And then I vowed that I would never do something like that again in my life and went down a dark path of figuring out what is APM and why we need it. Then I realized that I loved doing APM more than using APM. So I joined the industry on the provider side. And here I am.
Seems like a bit of a journey. I think it's very familiar for a lot of people as well, because that idea of there's like that inflection point where you understand that that is so important to you doing your job that you want to do more of it. And then it becomes addictive because it's like, but I want to do more of these things. I want that euphoria of being able to see that something happened. And I think that's really core to developers, that we like that the graph or the investigation. Personally, debugging is my favorite thing to do. I mean, it's not while I'm doing it, obviously, because then you get frustrated and pull your hair out. But then that euphoria you feel once you've done it is really amazing.
The dopamine hit.
Exactly. And then, you know, taking that into production and seeing those weird and obscure problems that only happen when you've got 10,000 requests happening at once. But yeah, like I say, a very familiar story for a lot of people.
I also see it as a ethical imperative. So if you're providing software with the importance that software has nowadays, people will get frustrated if the software is not doing very well. It's giving them a bad experience. And observability is the best way to reduce that, to understand from the point of view of the end user how well your software is performing, and it gives you a chance to make it good to the people using your labor.
As a user of software, I love that because, yes, I get so frustrated and it affects the quality of life of my whole family as I like yell and scream and they're like, Jess, are you okay? And I'm like, it's just computers.
Imagine you're there about to finally manage to land those Taylor Swift tickets and he crashes on you.
I love that as an observability provider slogan. It's like, we provide observability so your family doesn't need to suffer.
No, we provide observability so that your family will suffer less. Because let's be realistic. Bad software is here to stay. You just tell people that want to better themselves in making better software. I might mention I'm a bit cynical.
I mean, there's a scale, and I think all developers at some point are on that scale of cynicism. Does it take cynicism to be a good developer? No. But cynicism makes you a better developer.
I think that cynicism and the constant nag in the back of your head that this will fail is just a matter of how often actually actively helps you in reducing the amount of failures.
I wonder whether you could measure how long somebody's been in a developer career by how cynical they are. It's like, I've seen some things.
I think you can probably gauge the amount of trauma they underwent based on their humor. I don't think it's a matter of how long they have been, because there are some companies that succeed in packing a lot of trauma in a very short time.
That's true.
So you've been doing this for the better part of a decade. How do you think that we're doing in terms of making things better for developers?
Oh, that's a very nuanced question. There is so much to unpack. So I'll start by saying it has never been better being a geek, an observability geek, today. We went from observability being in large part a commercial play for anything that was not relatively simple systems like metrics from systemd or syslog. Refined APM technology has become ubiquitous. Almost universally accessible thanks to OpenTelemetry. Now, this being said, it's not universally available as a product. We have a long way to go to package the very powerful observability tools that are available in open source in a way that feels like a product more than a awesome Lego Technic kit. It's only an a phenomenon of the past few months that I've seen people obviously new to the field struggling with the difference between delta and cumulative metrics. This was not an experience that people had before because it was well hidden behind, right inside the sausage that is commercial observability. This being said, if you're interested in observability, it has never been a better time to jump in because there's so much available. A lot of technology that was only commercially available a decade ago. Now you can look how it's built. It's pretty great. It has a dark side, of course, for all the faults of large observability vendors also the past. It was their vested interest to support you and make your journey easier. And the very well-intended OSS community doesn't have that amount of resources to take everybody by the hand and making sure that they're wonderfully onboarded and they get great value of the technology, just because it's not how it works, right? Open source is much more self-motivated.
I think what you're touching on there is this idea that, and I was kind of going over this car analogy in my head of the idea that people just drive cars, and that's the APM stuff. They don't care about the engine. They care they need to put some fuel in it, and they need to pay for it and that kind of stuff. But now what we've done is said, here's the engine. You need to build it all yourself. And people are like, okay. Yeah, I didn't need to know all that. Now I need to know what a, I don't know, is a carburetor a thing? I've heard that. I don't know what one is myself, but you know, I think it's a thing in a car. But that idea that some people don't want just to drive the car. They kind of want to tweak it, make it faster, that kind of stuff. And we've gone from one end of abstraction to no abstraction whatsoever. And like you say, those cumulative and delta metrics that people now need to understand how they emit them in their applications. They need to understand what temporal aggregations are and all this kind of stuff inside of their applications. And realistically, most people don't want that. And I think metrics is one of those things where it does get incredibly complicated, which is why I love tracing, because it's not anywhere near as complicated.
Tracing is pretty difficult. Go and try to explain somebody where to lose the trace context because they're doing a weight in Node.js, and all of a sudden they lose the active span and then you see their head explode.
Oh, I've seen Jess do that for the last couple of weeks.
The nice thing is that at least you can pretty well visualize the security tracing. If you have a notion of operation and you map that to a span, then you kind of get there, right? There are gotchas, but at least it's something that you can visually make. It's either a tree or it's a directed graph, but you can see it. Go and explain the metrics, time windows, and aggregations over that. And yes, you can make charts. And for example, when you go on PromLens, there are very nice courses about it. But it takes much more math to appreciate metrics and why they work the way they do than it does tracing or logs.
I think tracing is harder when you try to visualize. Metrics is harder when you try to generate.
Oh, query is terrible with metrics.
I want to graph these metrics that like I'm getting from the kubelet stats for Siebert, right? So there's this OTel collector standard stuff. And it's emitting these metrics. And in order to graph them correctly, I need to know whether they're delta and cumulative. And I need to know the time frame that they're emitted on and like what their units are and stuff like that. And I cannot find that anywhere. I don't know how to make a correct graph of a metrics because I'm not in control of both ends. I'm not both the one emitting and the one displaying. And like you said, if one provider is doing both of those, you don't have to worry about it. But I need to worry about it.
Yeah.
And that also already assumes that you are in control, well, that you're very well acquainted and fluent in the query language.
That's true.
Because metrics query languages tend to expose the full complexity of the very complex data source behind in ways that tracing doesn't, because most of the query languages, with maybe the exception of TraceQL, they're pretty limited in the amount of querying and correlation that they can do on the spans. It's still very much a matter of looking at single spans, how many spans like these are, but it's very seldom that you have a tool that allows you to say, give me all the traces where this happens, and within 5 minutes, something else happens downstream as a consequence of that. So the whole nature, the whole graph nature with parent-child relations and the implied causality of the child span happening because of the parent span is still mostly untapped in the industry. So when we get there, probably the security tracing querying will get as hard as metrics. It's just not there yet because of the limitations of the tech nowadays.
Yeah, there is some complexities that come with the trace querying stuff. And, you know, my experience, I've been in quite a few different tools, but from a honeycomb perspective, for instance, we treat each span individually and you can query all of those. The idea of being able to do the relationships up and down the trees and adjacent spans and stuff like that, that's when things start to get really complicated.
And we haven't announced anything about that yet.
And interestingly enough, the way that technology has developed in cloud native in the past 10 years has made the importance of causality in a trace much bigger than it used to be. When we used to build our systems mostly synchronously, where the client would wait until the server was done, then you could more or less imply the causality just by timestamps. But now our systems love to do stuff asynchronously, like putting messages in queues, consuming batches of messages, losing the trace context all at once from all the messages. And it's very hard to find a system that, given trace data, describing asynchronous processes to give you the guarantee that the message that your API received resulted in that unit of work being done within a certain amount of time from the message being received in a completely different component. And that is very relevant for systems that have QoS requirements. I should probably use SLI, SLOs, like we do nowadays, expectations for the customers. Because saying to the customer that 204, I accept your request, and then nothing happens, it's not the best experience.
I always love the idea that people think that just because I'm using a HTTP API, I've built a distributed monolith and things go through, that everything can be just correlated by timestamps as to what happened in which order. And then you say to them, so when was the last time that you synced the time between all of your servers? And they go, say what now? and you're like, so, you know, the time will skew between all of these services. When did you make sure that they were all in place? I'm like, you can do that.
You know what you should be doing? Like, you know, like in the scout camp where people gather around the bonfire and they tell each other scary stories. It's cautionary tales in large part. We should do the same at KubeCons, reading Lamport articles on clock skew to newcomers. Let's put some fear of time into them.
Yeah, I love the idea. I mean, we've been toying with the idea a few times of creating the idea of incident war stories, but I love the idea of like an observability camp at KubeCon where there's a little imaginary fire where we all tell our incident stories just to all of these new people.
If we live in a world where the level of abstraction has been increasing, right? Now we can deploy workloads that work more or less like on our machine, thanks to containers on infrastructure, on silicon that is on the other side of the world, and it mostly works. And that has made doing simple things simple, and it has increased exponentially the amount of very complex failures that can occur. And when those occur, it's worse than ever before, because one thing is the rack exploded. It's a very tangible thing. You know what to do. You get another one and plug it in. And the other is, all of a sudden, I cannot really debug my Lambda. I don't know what's going on in there. I cannot profile it. I don't know where the execution time is going. I cannot attach a step debugger in there. I can try to fire some things. I mean, well, God knows what happens to my customers, right? So there is a price to pay. Easy things are getting easier. And dealing with failure is getting harder. And this is a curse for new people.
And that's why we need more observability.
You need observability, but it's also something that will not be fixed only with observability. Sometimes, you know, I lay awake at night like a man in observability does, and I look at the ceiling and think just how scary it would be to enter the industry as a freshman today. When I started, the world was new and Java had no collections. And VMs were this exciting, exotic new topic where you could have multiple operating systems at your disposal. Nowadays, the amount of layers you need to peel from your application to understanding why something is not working is daunting.
Yes.
I was lucky enough to be able to digest that complexity little by little as it was deployed in front of my face. But the newcomer today is getting full frontal complexity thrown in the deep end of the pool and not surprised that it's so hard to make observability as a first-class requirement for applications because there is so much else that also is. And we advocated shift left to an extent that could be maybe described as Python to the left.
Whoa, I like nice. That. Pilot on to the left. I love it. I mean, it's going to catch on. I love what you're saying there around this this idea that there is way too much complexity. But the thing I don't agree with there is that actually now where we've got so much complexity, observability being a first-class citizen is something that it should be a first-class citizen now because that's how you unwrap that complexity. So, I mean, we talked recently about boot camps. And how boot camps go through a whole process. And then right at the end, they teach you about observability. And that's just the wrong way to do it, in my opinion. The first thing that you should be teaching people is how do you observe them? And then everything else that they do is then understanding that complexity.
But until we make it easy, until somehow emitting really useful telemetry and immediately getting use out of that is straightforward, then it's not a shift, it's a pile it on.
But also, we should not assume that we can really convey the right way of performance observability when the recipient, the person listening to us, does not have an accurate model of how things fail. So I am pretty skeptical.
Which would never have a complete model of how things fail.
But there are so many types of failures.
Exactly.
There are so many things that can go wrong. Go and explain to a new buyer that although they instrumented all their applications perfectly, telemetry is not there because the process crashed before the exporter could flush.
Or the telemetry is, you're trying to emit it from the browser and good luck.
Yeah, it's even better. Like when we start talking about user monitoring as a distributed trace and you realize that you effectively had no means to ensure that the span is actually ended.
Exactly.
So it becomes not, it's not really a trace and it's great fun. But it's the kind of great fun that requires a nuanced understanding of the technology. So I am a bit skeptical that unless as an industry we decide that we should be more deliberate in the way we welcome complexity and we start getting a bit rigorous in using the simplest thing that works, that we will actually be able to level up and live up to the title we start ourselves with, software engineers. I mean, let's be honest. Unless you're working at a top company, if people build bridges the way we build softwares, nobody would cross a pond without fear of death. So I think we have some systemic issue about complexity and that observability is one of the areas where it shows.
Right. Because what we need to teach the newcomers is not how to ignore the complexity, which many of the layers are there so that you don't have to know where it runs. And we teach people to ignore it. We need to teach them to cope with it.
Maybe it's a little even further than that. In Italian, we have a saying that says, learn the art and put it on the side. This means, in context, that in order to be able to make the correct engineering decisions about, for example, what database you should be using for a use case, you must have a very nuanced understanding of the use case and a very good mental model of how different databases are, what they're good for and what they're not, so that you can get the best one. But then again, this is something that you can expect only with people with a significant amount of experience. I put in the past, when they used the word seniority, it is almost devoid of any meaning nowadays, but let's say in terms of maturity in their craft.
Or amount of trauma.
Yeah, the trauma is the way that we process bad things that happen to us. If I met people that I cannot understand, they don't get traumatized by stuff like that. They learn, they are thankful for the experience, and they move on. And I envy them, and I do not understand them.
So I need to go on my LinkedIn profile and change from senior engineer to traumatized engineer.
Yeah.
Because that's the new title we're going for.
Yeah, well traumatized.
No, I mean, the whole thing about seniority is a very inflationary phenomenon in the industry where you get senior in 2 years. Bloody hell. After 2 years of profession, I should not have been left alone with a compiler.
Yeah, so more than cope with complexity, we need to work skillfully within it. And I really like what you said about learn the art and then put it on the side. Because like your databases example, if at some point you have a problem that requires you to get to know several different databases or several problems, even better, that if you have that in your past, even though you're not a DBA, that's not the focus of your job, it like colors what you're able to bring perspective to throughout your future. And this is one way that we get breadth of knowledge and that's really useful. And yeah, it's something that quantity of different years of experience matters a lot.
And it's not just about how much experience you had, but with whom you're fed it with. Because if you spend tens of years in a sweatshop where people looked at everything they had was a hammer, so every problem was a nail, you probably were not exposed to the kind of deep senior expert staff level kind of thinking of looking at the problem long and hard and then find the right compromise for the right technology to use. So it's as much how long you've been doing the job, but also who you had to learn from or with.
Yeah.
And whether the environment was supportive of this really expensive process of acquiring a lot of very specialized knowledge.
I like that you said that the expert is sitting back and thinking really hard and finding not the solution to the problem, but the right compromise for the situation. Because there are not solutions to this.
But there is not always one solution. There is several. Some you may come to regret.
Or somebody who comes after you learns to regret them.
Right. What new problems does your solution engender? Yeah.
Something that may be a solution today, you wake up tomorrow and it is your worst nightmare. Come true through your own labor.
Yeah.
It's a very humbling experience.
I love those moments where you go back and look at the code and you there's some profanities that are being thrown at the code going, who did this? And then all of a sudden everything goes quiet in the corner because you realize that actually the other person was actually you.
I developed a habit of having Git blame active in my editor, not because I like to disparage my coworkers, but because I know that I was the idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without having to wonder.
There's something wonderful about knowing that something is somehow my doing, because then I can do something about it.
At the very least, you can try not to do it that way the next time.
Right.
And take responsibility, accept the accountability and learn.
Yeah, and I'd much rather learn something than be mad at someone else.
Yeah, it's also a wonderful feeling when you can express your complex feelings about bad software with somebody and learn from it. It's also something that lays mostly outside your control. So try to better yourself and not others.
Yeah.
I tend to have complex feelings about software.
As we should. I have to ask, what are you doing at Dash Zero?
I am a product manager by day, engineer by night.
And what product are you managing?
We don't have a product today. We are evaluating what we should be doing. As we've been discussing, observability is a very interesting state. OpenTelemetry has, to a very large extent, reduced the barrier of entry for example, new observability tools. Because now, having telemetry is pretty much commoditized. I remember, I think, Stano, we had to create our own set of tracers and implement in all languages in a consistent fashion. It was very expensive. So now we're looking at the state of the art, seeing what the problems are, and then we'll decide what to do about it. Meanwhile, we actually made a welcome present as a, hi, it's us, we're back. And, you know, we were playing with OpenTelemetry, and some of us have been doing OpenTelemetry professionally for a bit. And for all the wonderful capabilities that are available in the OpenTelemetry Connector, an agent with the complexity and amount of use cases it can solve that I've seldom seen before, also in commercial use cases, it's a bit unwieldy to configure, and it's not very welcoming to newcomers to visualize how the different pipelines fit with each other and the experience of converging to a correct configuration is a bit too trial and error for my taste, especially when you need to have the connector running on Kubernetes because otherwise some processors don't start because it's missing some specific environment variables for the Kube API authorization. So we made a small tool that allows you to upload your configurations and validate the syntactical correctness and to some level the semantics in the browser. And if you want a bit more assurance that your specific distribution of OpenTelemetry or the OpenTelemetry Collector will work with your configurations, we also build a backend validation where we're sending the configuration to a Lambda function running AWS that has inside an actual connector of that actual distribution, that actual version, and feeds it the configuration, sees it if it starts. It's just the first step. For example, we were talking about what it would take to make observability easier for newcomers. I think we, in the industry, we give for granted the amazing strides that in programming languages people could make just because of the quality of the integrated development environment. The stuff that we have today with VS Code or IntelliJ, I mean, when I started, it was already mind-blasting to see JBuilder. JBuilder was cool, but it doesn't hold a candle to what you can do today. And then came Eclipse. But in the world of observability and monitoring and to some extent cloud-native development, it feels like we're working with Notepad. And that is not helping lowering the barrier of entry. So we did something about it.
And where can we find that tool?
It is on otelbin.io. You're also very welcome to host your own. It's open source. It's free. We will never monetize it. It's just our love letter to the OpenTelemetry community.
It definitely expresses your expertise in OpenTelemetry and the collector.
It is an amazing piece of technology. It is not a piece of technology that was built for novices. It's for experts by experts. And it shows.
Yeah, you said OpenTelemetry has reduced the barrier of entry for tools. But now it's up to us to make those tools reduce the barrier of entry for developers and software creators everywhere.
I mean, there are several aspects to the impact that OpenTelemetry has had on the industry. On the one hand, there has been a crop of new startups that effectively built a UI for OpenTelemetry because it's much cheaper than having also to build all the telemetry collection. On the other hand, now that DevOps and Cloud Native has effectively spawned the concept of platform team, more companies have people that are dedicated to doing observability. That is like the first people since a while that may have observability as their main requirement. And their mission is, in many cases, to offer an internal product built on the open source project. So that's a very nice improvement. It scares me a bit in terms of mass market, because setting expectations that every company or that is not a mom and pop shop should have a platform team to make wieldable the platform for the internal developers, it's a bit sad. That is something that the way we build technology should enable, not to have effectively techno-priests inside the company doing that for us. But it beats the alternative of having to debug why somebody said that they logged into someone else's account by just using access logs in the year of the Lord, 2015.
I have lots of feelings around the demystification of platforms and providers and building abstractions and all that kind of stuff, but that's probably an entirely separate podcast.
Right.
That's the kind of thing that you used to be able to work up Kelsey Hightower with. He had very nuanced opinions about the way, for example, Kubernetes would be the OS for the cloud. And to some extent, it's true. But I don't think we've done enough as an industry to build products rather than also technologies. There is a significant gap. And the significant gap tends to be how easy it is to be successful with the technology.
Is that why you moved from staff engineering to product management?
To some extent, yes. My move from staff engineer to product manager was empowerment in nature. I realized I could have a higher impact by programming via Outlook than I could programming via VS Code. So that allowed me to scale my contribution a little higher. And then in the process, I acquired love for the end user and deep empathy with what they're doing.
Oh, okay.
And I never looked back.
I think that's something that we do as developers. We want to increase our impact. And the idea of being a senior or being a manager, I think stems from this underlying desire to increase our impact. And I think then, you know, moving into maybe it's product management or developer experience and all that kind of stuff, it's all about this desire to have more impact.
But there are, as always, there is a light side and a dark side. On the one hand, there is impact as in I'm doing good to the people using my tech. the kind of empathic, altruistic things of, I do software that is helpful, the software that feels good like using. And the dark side of this is the impact done by doing things, either because of the pleasure of doing things and creating new technology because of the interest that one has, although if you put a technology in the wild, it's a bit your responsibility, or the season of perf, where you have to increase your impact to increase your salary. When you look, for example, at the very complex history of messaging solutions done at Google, one could argue whether impact is a healthy measure for driving product decisions. I mean, a lot of those messaging systems happen because somebody needed to be promoted.
Right. The incentives are so hard.
Yeah, but the incentives are not oriented to the end user.
Right.
When in order to get promoted, you need to launch something, instead of landing something, instead of solving a problem, you end up with a lot of cathedrals in the desert. And somebody else will be left behind to pick up your pieces.
Right. So there's impact as measured by your performance review. And then there's impact on like real people.
Yeah.
Michaela, it's been a wonderful conversation. And I want to ask if there's anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap up.
I'll be around the KubeCon with my Dash Zero pals.
That's KubeCon in Paris this year?
In Paris.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Pass by and say hi.
Yes, I'll be there too. And we will definitely we'll definitely meet up and chat.
Where else can people find you?
I am regrettably back on Twitter. I am on LinkedIn. I am on Mastodon. But I tend not to put much meaningful content in the air. I prefer my software to speak for myself.
And they can find your software at hotelbin.io.
Yeah,
awesome.
All right, we'll put the other social media links in the show notes, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
See you all at KubeCon.io.
Bye, everyone.
That's all we have time for today. If you're interested in being a guest on this show, or if you would like to suggest a topic, find us on Twitter at OlliCast. That's OlliCast. OlliCast is brought to you by HeavyBit, the leading investor in developer-first startups. To learn more about HeavyBit, visit heavybit.com.